excited to get an opportunity to share with you today. We're going to get into the Bible in one spot, Philippians chapter 2. So you can click there, turn there if you want to. I'm going to be reading out of the New Living Translation. So if you got a digital version, that's what I'm going to be reading from. If you got a paper version, follow along. It may sound just a little different than what you got there. But I want to talk to you today a message that I feel like the Lord has laid on my heart, entitled Resetting Our Expectations. Don't you know every now and then we need our expectations reset because we got the wrong expectations? I have a weakness for technology, like I'll confess. Some women have a lot of shoes. I have a weakness for technology, okay? It's the weakness inside of me. And so I love when a new iPhone comes out, and so I don't always buy it right away because I struggle to pay them full price. I wait for a little while for it to come down, but I always can't wait to swap out my phone. And every time I do, I go and I sell my old phone myself. I don't give it to them because I know I can make more myself than letting somebody else make money off me. And so, I mean, it just makes sense. And so one of the things I do, though, every time I get a new iPhone to my old one is I do a hard reset. Take it all the way back to the very beginning, the factory, the way it is, because there are things on my phone that I want. And I realize that if I'm about to sell it to somebody, that there may be things that on my phone that they don't want. Well, the other reality is they don't need. And so either way, I reset that thing all over again. Because when they get that phone, they expect to get it in a way they can set it up the way they want it. And sometimes in life, we kind of need that same moment to have our expectations kind of get a hard reset. I could go so many ways with this. Like, I really think this would be a fun sermon series sometime for us to dive into. Because I think we could talk about resetting our expectations in our marriage, in our families, in our finances. I mean, oh yeah, I know, like, no amens there. Like, it got quiet. But there's so many ways the Bible kind of shows us the expectations that the Lord has for us. But a lot of times we have our own set of expectations. And so what do we do when expectations don't line up? Like, I know this. I know one of the greatest sources of frustration in people's life is when they have a set of expectations that somebody else does not meet. Y'all know what I'm talking about, because if any of you have dated somebody or gotten married, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because you come into a relationship with a set of expectations, and this other person has a different set of expectations, and when those expectations are different and come together, that's like when fireworks happen, and I'm not talking the good kind on the 4th of July, right? Those are the moments where we come together in relationships and, well, I thought you were going to do the dishes and cook me supper and have it ready for me when I get home. And I thought you were going to do the laundry, and I thought you were going to do this. Well, I thought you were going to make enough money I could stay home. Woo! See, there we go. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Some of them expectations already. We have these expectations of our family, right? Like, if you got kids, like, I thought the fact that the dishwasher was empty and you got dirty dishes, you'd have stuck them in the dishwasher. Like, I didn't think I'd have to say that. I thought you'd see that pile of clean clothes on your bed that you would just go ahead and fold and hang up and put away. I didn't think it needed me to actually tell you what to do with those clothes. Parents out there are like, yep, I'm feeling you. All the kids are like, I should have went with the Lone Star Kids today. This is not going the way I thought. Yes, you should have. Man, we got work expectations, right? We come to work and I thought my boss would care more about this, or I thought my coworkers would be helping me with this. And you've got one set of expectations and they've got another. And most of the time they become frustrating because we've never taken the time to get together and clarify those expectations. And I would dare to say that for some of us in this place, there is a set of expectations that we're frustrated with in our relationship with Jesus. And I would say it's because we've kind of come into it with our own set of expectations. And we haven't taken the time to really clarify if those are the same expectations that Jesus has for us. And when those expectations don't line up, a lot of times we get frustrated. Jesus, because you're not answering my prayer the way I thought you would. You're not answering it fast enough. You're not answering it in the way I thought you should. And so in those moments, what do we do when our expectations aren't being met? And I think those are the moments where we need to have those expectations reset. There's an author, Brené Brown, who says this about expectations, that disappointment is unmet expectations. And the more significant the expectations, the more significant the disappointment. Any of y'all there? Man, I'm a guy who has high expectations. Like, I'm not going to lie. When it comes to roping, every time I back into the box, like, I'm already thinking about winning. Like, I'm not there just to sling a rope and hope. Like I'm getting in the box thinking, man, I want to win this thing. And so every time I don't, which has been every time, there's this disappointment inside of me because I haven't won yet, because my expectation is high. But I'm not going to lower my expectations to lower my frustration. And so somewhere along the way, we've got to learn what we do in these moments where expectation does not line up with everything that we have. And I think for us with Jesus, there's a set of expectations that Jesus has for us. And so many times we get frustrated because he's not meeting our expectations. But I think so many times our expectations are stuck on the here and now, in this physical moment, and Jesus is focused on an eternal set of expectations that are going to live way beyond this moment that we find ourselves in. And so here's what I believe, that Jesus wants to leverage the physical for the eternal. And if we could get our mind around that set of expectations, Jesus never comes with just this moment in mind. But he's created this moment for a much bigger eternal purpose. And so many times our expectation is stuck in this one moment that we can't see it the way Jesus sees it. And so he begins to show us in Philippians 2 how he's called us to reset our expectations. And so Philippians chapter 2, starting in verse 3, it says this. It says, don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. Don't look out only for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. Like, can I just stop there right now and say, those first two verses, like, we're all guilty, right? Like, I'm guilty. I'll put it that way. And if you are not guilty of any of those things in those first two verses, come see me after church, man. I would love to meet you and know how you are doing it. Because, man, I'm just going to be honest. Sometimes I'm selfish. I am. Sometimes I'm not looking out for people around me the way that I should. Like, I'm only looking out for me. I don't like it. I don't want to be that way. But the reality is, that is the world that we live in. That is the culture that we are all growing up and living in right now. And he's about to say, stop, because that's not my expectation for my people. Verse 5, you must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. Like, it's time for an attitude adjustment. I think that was the nickname of my dad's belt when I was growing up too. Any of your other dads had that nickname for your belt? It was the attitude adjuster. It was amazing how quick thing changes when you heard that. Ching, ching, ching. Like, you knew. I'm good, Dad. Though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he, Jesus, gave up his divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. And when he appeared in human form, he humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on a cross. Like, to me, suddenly Jesus just took all of the expectations that we may have had and he kind of shook it up and said, let me turn this whole thing upside down for you. Because in this world, it's going to try to get you to be selfish, and it's going to get you to try to impress other people, and it's not going to want you to be humble and think of other people as better than yourselves. It's going to want you to put yourself ahead of everybody else, because that's the world that we live in. That's the sinful nature that's broken inside of us. And so he calls us in verse 5 to have the same attitude, to have the same mindset that Christ Jesus had. And so how do we think and act the way Jesus has called us to think and act is the question that we have to do. But in order to do that, we have to get this. I think so many times we want to make Jesus more like us than make ourselves more like Jesus. Because if I can make Jesus more like me, I can justify the way I am. But if I have to make myself more like Jesus, suddenly there's no system of justification at that point. I want you to hear something. The goal in life isn't to be a better version of you. I'm just going to say that now. The goal in life is for you to reflect Jesus to a world that desperately needs him. That's the goal as a follower of Christ. If you just want to be a better you, you're never going to be good enough. But if we can learn a little bit more each day to look like Jesus to a world that needs to see Jesus, then we'll be getting what he's saying here when we turn our priorities upside down. And so the first thing that I want us to get here is Jesus is trying to get us to understand is this: be clingy. And I don't mean clingy like that girlfriend you had once in high school that like followed you everywhere. Like, I'm not talking about that kind of clingy. I'm not talking about clingy like static electricity in your clothes and you can't get them to stop sticking to you everywhere. But Jesus was clingy to the right thing. In verse 6, it said, though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something that he could cling to. So there were some things that Jesus knew he had to let go of, but there were also some things he knew he had to hold on to, that he had to cling to. I mean, he's God of the entire universe, the one who created everything, who sustains everything, who gave up all of those things, did not think the position that he held was worth holding on to. He was willing to let it go. I mean, if you think about it this way, that the very people that were yelling, crucify him, were using the breath that he was giving them permission to breathe to yell, crucify him. Like, I'm glad that was Jesus. Because if I had that power, I would like turn into Darth Vader and start doing the force choke out of people like that. Like just, I know. You're like, it's a good thing I'm not Jesus. I'm telling you, I'm not there yet. But Jesus laid all of those things down. But you know what he did cling to? It goes on to say what? That he was obedient to God and died a criminal's death on a cross. Jesus clung to the will of the Father, and he clung to reaching out to people that were lost and broken so that they could be saved. That's what Jesus held to. That was what he was clinging tightly to. If anything else, he was willing to let go of all that was rightfully his in heaven. He was willing to let all of those things go, but he was holding on to the will of the Father, and he was holding on to every person who would ever be lost and broken and destroyed by sin because he wanted to save them. And there was nothing else in this world that was worth holding on to than those two things to Jesus. See, there are certain things you and I need to cling to. But the problem is if we start trying to grab everything, we lose sight of holding on to the right things. And we live in a world that tries desperately to get us to cling to all that we can. Right? We cling to money. We cling to our bank accounts. We cling to our houses. We cling to our possessions. We cling to our jobs. We hold tightly to so many things. But Paul said in verse 3, he said, don't do anything out of selfish ambition. So much of what we cling to is motivated by me and something I want to get for myself. In fact, that word selfish ambition is literally a political term about electioneering to try to promote oneself ahead of others so that you'll pick me. Like, I get so tired of political season right now. I mean, I would love to turn this whole political system upside down. Like, how about you just tell us what you're for and how you're going to make things better and still telling us how bad everybody else is? Like, that's why I'd never make it as president. Like, I just... But this idea of selfish ambition, and Jesus is like, I don't cling to any of those things. I give those things up because it's not about me and what I want. It's about the will of the Father and what he's called me to do. He was showing that he was serving the Father by what he was choosing to hold on to. The thing that you're clinging to most in life is the thing that you are serving with your life. Crickets, I know, like, let that soak in for just a minute. The thing that you are clinging to the most in life is the thing that you are serving with your life. And so the question is that Jesus? And we hold on to a lot of things, but at the end of the day, that house is going to rot away and be worth nothing. At the end of the day, all of that money in the bank account one day is going to be gone. Even the very people that you and I try to cling to one day are going to pass away. And all we're going to have is Jesus one day. And I think sometimes Jesus strips away all of those other things in life so we can learn how to cling on to the one thing that matters most, and that's Jesus and reaching people that need him. And that's the example, that's the expectation that Jesus is putting in front of his people here in Philippians 2. Cling to the right thing, but then he also goes on, and we have to get this, is we have to hold loosely all of the other things. Because Jesus gave up his privileges. Verse 7, it said, instead, he gave up his divine privileges. See, we got to understand, when Jesus gave up all of the privileges of heaven that he had, he subjected himself to the same limitations that you and I face. He faced suffering. He was mistreated by people. He was misunderstood by people. He was hated by people, and he was eventually killed. And he was doing everything he could to help them. He was feeding people that needed to be fed. He was healing sick people. He was setting spiritually oppressed people free. He was casting out demons. He was doing all that he could for those people that end up still, at the end of the day, crucifying him. But rather than keep a hold of what he felt like he was owed as a privilege, he let that thing go. See, if we're not careful, and we hold on to the wrong things and start holding on to the privileges we have, like we're owed them, we lose sight of the real thing. And Jesus is like, look, it's not about the privileges I get. He gave up everything and came to earth in the poorest of terms possible. The king of the universe should have came in a much different way and lived in a much different setting. And instead, he gave up all of the privileges and all of the rights that he had. And instead of demanding those, he came as one of the poorest of the poor and served those that were hurting and broken. He didn't come in a castle. He didn't come with kingdom and fanfare. People didn't wave palm leaves and feed him food his entire life. In fact, he came just the opposite. But somewhere along the way, if we're going to demand to have our privileges, we start to feel entitled and start to feel like we're owed some things. Let me tell you, privileges are just that. They're a gift. They're a privilege, and we're not owed. And yet, somehow I think in culture, we have begun to feel entitled and owed some things because of privileges that we've enjoyed. Nobody owes you health care. Nobody owes you a good job. Nobody owes you a college education. That's a privilege. Because of the country we live in, it's a privilege that a lot of people have gotten to enjoy, but it's a privilege. It's not something that we're owed, but somewhere along the way, when we start feeling entitled to those things and we lose sight of them as privileges that we simply hold loosely, things begin to change. And people who feel owed things are owned by the things they feel owed. Tell me I'm wrong. Take one of those things away that they feel owed, and look what happens. They will lose their ever-loving mind. And they'll get angry, and they'll get frustrated, and they'll get offended. And the people that you thought they cared about, they're suddenly willing to walk away on when they take one of those privileges away. Because if you're not careful, the things that you feel like somebody owes you will begin to own you. And that's why Jesus said, look, there's only one thing that owns me. That's doing the will of the Father and reaching people that are lost and broken. And so these privileges are things that I've got to enjoy, but I'm willing to hold them loosely and give them all up if it means that's what it takes to follow the will of the Father and reach people that are hurting and broken. And yet we live in a world that's trying to tell us, you get what you're owed, and you get what you have a right to, and you should have these privileges just like everybody else. And Jesus turns his kingdom expectations upside down on what the world tries to tell us how we ought to live. And then the other thing that Jesus does to me, and this is the part that to me is just the most amazing piece, is it says that he humbly served. Verse 7 says that he took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. And when he appeared in human form, he humbled himself. Twice this word humble has shown up. In obedience to God, and died a criminal's death on a cross. We got to understand that the path to humility is paved with obedience to God. Somewhere along the way, to be a humble person means it's not about what I want, it's about what he wants. I remember when I interviewed for this position here almost 4 years ago, really close to right at 4 years now. I remember sitting in a truck having a conversation with Pastor Randy. One, we had just gone to Starbucks. I know it's hard to believe Pastor Randy drinking coffee. And I remember him telling me, he said, there's two things that you have to have in order to work well here. He said, you have to be humble and you have to be teachable. And he said, if you are those two things, you're going to love this place. And if you do not have those two things, you're not going to like this place. And I think the reason that he said that, though, is because it's what Christ has called us to be. Be humble, teachable people who are not focused on ourselves and what I can get for me, but are focused on others and what's best for us. So you want to expose real quickly how selfish you are? Let me give you a really quick litmus test. If you think you're right most of the time or all of the time, you're probably a selfish person. Ooh, I know, like don't look at anybody next to you so they don't think you're talking about them, right? Eye straight ahead from here on out. If you use the word I and me more than us or we, you might be a selfish person. If I go to your social media account and all I see is 527 pictures of you and nothing else on your social media account, you might be stuck on yourself just a little bit. But Jesus came in the humble position of a servant. And I've heard Pastor Randy say this, and the longer I've sat in a position of leadership, the more I believe it's true. So many people write great books about leadership, but nobody writes a great book about what it means to serve. And I'm convinced that the best leader in history was Jesus. Because he took 12 guys that you and I, on our best day, would have never gotten what Jesus got out of them. And turned it into something that absolutely turned this world upside down. And has carried on for more than 2,000 years since his time on earth. From those 12 people. And he did it from the position of a humble servant. Not from an elevated position of authority and influence that we would think somebody would want in this world to lead a lot of people. He did it as a nobody. Really, for the first 30 years of his life, short of a couple stories when he was a kid, we don't even know anything about the man. He lived in almost relative obscurity until the last 3 years of his life. Not trying to build a platform, not trying to build a name for himself, not trying to gain influence with the right people so he could turn things upside down. Just showed up humbly serving the hurt and broken and doing what the Father asked him to do. And if we could get a hold of this, we could turn this world upside down for Jesus. But in order to get a hold of it, some of us need a hard reset in our expectations of what it means to follow Jesus. Because the reality is, I thought Judge Max said it so well, and this is what has stuck in my head from hearing it last week. You and I are saved to serve. That's what Jesus is saying here in Philippians 2. You're not saved to hold a position of leadership other people. You are saved to serve people. You are not saved to take up a chair on a Sunday morning. Although I'm glad you're here, but you've been saved and we pour into you every week because at some point Jesus wants to take your life and use you to serve other people and pour out into them what's being poured into you right now. Every week we come to church because there are people that are not interested in just waiting for somebody to give them something, but they're interested in giving back because of what Jesus has done in them. That parking lot crew out there, in my opinion, is one of the most humble and incredible teams that we have here. Rain or shine. Yeah, give them a hand, man. Rain or shine, hot or cold. After every team roping, I mean, Mr. Jerry O'Brien that leads that team, if y'all have never met him, I would encourage you. Every time we have a team roping, he's here. I don't even know what time he gets here. I'm here by 7, and he's usually already here with a scoop shovel, going through the parking lot, cleaning up the deposits of fertilizer left from that team roping. So when you come to church on Sunday, you can walk through the parking lot without stepping in something. That every week we have an incredible team of people that serve back in Lone Star Kids and love on kids well. And God bless any of you that would ever give your life to go serve in Lone Star Kids. I think it's awesome. I love kids in short bursts. So thank you. But the fact that somebody would give up of their time and go back there and deal with kids that are crying, kids that are hurting, kids that are frustrated, that don't want to sit still for more than 30 seconds and take the time to share the love of Jesus with them is an incredible example of what it means to be a humble servant. We have people every week that open up their homes to life groups, and I understand that that is not a 1 or 2 hour commitment. If your spouse is anything like mine, like she's cleaning the house the whole day before she's about to let somebody into our house for a life group, and then she's cooking things and preparing things and making sure everything's set out and looking nice, and that hours that are spent in getting ready for a Bible study, also we can spend a couple of hours together. Some of the most humble servants this church has got is our life group leaders. It's inside of our men and women's ministry every Thursday night and Friday morning for the ladies. For the men and women that work hard all week, that try to be moms and dads, that have responsibilities more than most of us can even grasp, and yet you take the time for a couple hours every week to come and pour into other men and women and sacrifice so much and are an incredible example of what it means to be humble and serve. And the reality is there's room for you to come be a part of any one of those things that you want to be a part of. There's room for you and I to reset our expectations and stop waiting for somebody to do something for us and making it about me and I, and turn that thing upside down and start making it about us and we. Because this is not just my church, this is our church. Yeah. And this is not just my message, this is our message from Jesus that he's given to us. And it's not about me, it's not about any one person, it's about all of us together doing what God has put inside of us to do what we can to serve those people that are hurting and broken so that we can reach as many people as we can for him. Because that's all that matters when it's all said and done. This building one day is going to fade away, these chairs are going to rot out. All we're going to have left is the eternal things that we have invested our life in. And so the challenge that we have in this moment to me is this, is are you willing to nail your expectations to the cross and live for Jesus' expectations of you? That answer has eternal implications. Because if you are willing to die to what you want and live to what Jesus wants for you, I promise you, he's going to use your life and do some awesome things. But somewhere along the way, you and I have to be willing to nail our expectations to the cross. I have to die to what Jason wants. Because there are days where I don't want to do what I do, but it's not about what I want, it's about what he wants. And every day I have to nail my set of expectations to the cross, and I have to ask Jesus for help because I can't do it on my own, to help me live the life you want me to live, Jesus. Anything good you see in me, I promise you, it's not Jason. It's Jesus. And anything you see in me you don't like, that's Jason. that's Jason. Because it's the moment I let my expectations get in the way of Jesus' expectations. And he turns that thing upside down. And to me, man, messages like this are so hard for me to want to preach. They really are. Because, like, I'm just telling you, I don't have it all together. I would love to say I'm the most selfless, humble person I know who never thinks about himself and always thinks about other people. And if you can make that statement, you've just made a contradictory statement. And so that's a whole nother sermon for another time. But I'm not. Like, man, there are days where I get in the way. There are days where I am just selfish and I don't think about the people around me. I get stuck on what's going on inside of me. There are days where I don't think, God, what is your goal today? There are days where I'm thinking about, man, this is Jason's ambition and goal for the day. And I have spent so much of my life chasing after that and realizing that I don't even want what Jason wants when it's all said and done. Because the moments I've got it, it's left me empty inside. You know, some of the greatest moments in my life that I have felt the most satisfied are the moments where I have served and loved other people well. Not the moments where I got what I want. Not the moments where I got to the top or I got the right possessions or got the right things in my life. As much as I want to win that belt buckle, I understand one day that belt buckle is not going to satisfy anything inside of me. You can ask guys that have chased down Super Bowl rings, or you can talk to women that have made it to the gold medal of Olympics, and they will tell you they get to the top and there's still something missing inside. Because it's not about what we can gain for ourselves. It's about what we can give to others and make a difference in this world for something that's going to outlive us. And that, my friends, is Jesus Christ. See, there's another side to this coin, though. Is there some of you that have come in with this expectation that God could never love me? That I've made so many mistakes, I've sinned so many times, you don't know my rap sheet, you don't know my history, you don't know my story. If you knew me, you would understand why I expect that God could never love somebody like me. But the reality is, I would tell you that Jesus has already showed you how much he loved you by what we just read in Philippians 2. Because he gave up all of heaven and everything that he had every right to. He laid down all of those privileges and he humbled himself in one of the most humbling ways possible to follow the will of the Father and die on a cross and be crucified because he loves you. And you can't ask for a greater message of affection than that. So many people will do something like that for us after we've done something for them. But Jesus isn't waiting for you to get your life right. He's showing now with a long rap sheet that you've got and all the mistakes that you made that he loves you even with that rap sheet. Because he didn't wait for you to get your life together. He said, while your life is still jacked up and broken, I did this for you to show you that I love you before you ever did anything for me. And so you need a reset of your expectations. And I believe God has sent me here today on purpose so that you can know that he does love you. And he does have a plan for you. And it doesn't matter what that history and that rap sheet says, he can take your life and do something incredible with it if you're willing to let go of having your way and start living it his way. With every head bowed and every eye closed, nobody looking around, maybe you're here in this place and you're that person. Maybe you're watching online and you're that person. Like, you feel like, man, Jesus could never love me. You don't know how many times I've failed. You don't know how many mistakes I've made. You don't know my story. You don't know my history. You don't know how bad I've been. And you're right, I don't, but I know how good Jesus is. And his good is better than all of your bad. His love covers all of your sins, if you'll just let it. If you'll just make a decision today that it's time to reset the way that you're living your life and stop living it your way and start living it his way, he'll begin to do something incredible in your life. You'll begin to experience his love in a real, tangible way, and he'll start writing a new story with your life. the best part is he'll take you to reach people just like you. He won't just save you, but he'll start using you to save other people too. So if you're here in this place, maybe you have never made a decision to follow Jesus and you want to make that commitment today. Or maybe you made a decision to live for Jesus a long time ago, but you know you've just not been keeping your end of the bargain and you want to make a new commitment to Jesus today. If that's you, would you just slip your hand up so that we can put a Bible in it and pray with you today? Is there anybody that would say, Pastor, I want to give my life to Jesus today? Okay. Let's stand all across this place. How many of you would be willing to say that maybe God's Spirit has been speaking to you during this message, that maybe there's some things in your life where you've been just selfish, if we can just call it for what it is. And you've kind of focused on you and yourself and what Jesus can do for you. And maybe it's time to nail some of those things to the cross and give them to Jesus and ask him, what is his expectation of you today? If that's you, would you slip your hand up so we could just pray with you all across this place? I'm raising my hand because I'm here to tell you it's me. Let's just take a moment here at the end of service for every hand raised here, every hand raised online, and let's just make a commitment to God by these raised hands today that we're going to nail those things to the cross that he's dealing with us about, and we're going to ask him to help us change our expectations and live for him. Jesus, I'm so thankful for every hand that's raised in this place here, for every hand that's raised online, for those that are watching wherever they may be. I'm thankful, Holy Spirit, that you love us enough to show us the areas in our life that don't line up with your word. I'm thankful for the grace that you show us in pointing those things out. And I thank you for those that raised their hand today, myself included, that had the courage to say, I am selfish, but I don't want to be that way anymore. I do focus on myself too much, and it's time to focus on what Jesus wants for me. And I pray that for every hand that was raised, you would help them nail those things to the cross today. I pray that not only would they nail those things to the cross, Lord, but you would begin to speak to our hearts and speak to our lives about how we can live more intentionally for you and stop asking about what's in it for me and what I can get out of it and start thinking about what's in it for us and what we can do to reach more people for you. God, if you're calling us to serve, may we jump in and serve. May we jump in and give. May we do whatever it takes to reach as many people as we can for you, Jesus. And we make this commitment with hands raised to you today, asking you all in your name. And everybody says, amen. Listen, our prayer team is up here. If you need prayer this morning, please come down and let one of our prayer team members pray with you. We love you guys, and we'll see you back here next week.